You are listening to Substitute Squad, episode 234. Boy, this is embarrassing. And welcome to Substitute Squad, your favorite Suicide Squad podcast. For years,
at least people, I hope.
Well, I mean, of all of the many, many Suicide Squad podcasts, I feel as though we're somewhere near
the top of the list, right?
We should be, you fickle, fickle bitches.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm Paul French, and my favorite supervillain this week is the Phantasm. The little girl and I watched Batman Mask of the Phantasm this morning. And
I thought you meant like the old creepy guy in the cemetery.
No, that he's actually called the Tall Man.
Oh, the Tall Man.
Yeah. Yes, guys, I'm not saying I'm a great parent, but I'm better than that.
Okay, just checking, because you know, I was like, that's a little hardcore, but I could see. I go, yeah, Daddy, I want to watch it.
Ooh, those balls are shiny. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, Mask of the Phantasm, the Batman animated movie. And yeah, it's a fun one. Abe Vigoda's in it. You can't go wrong with Abe Vigoda.
Can't go wrong with Abe Vigoda. Is he still around? Is he still alive?
He is. I checked.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You, sir, are a legend, Mr. Vigoda.
And, Efren Zimbalist Jr., who voiced Alfred, not that far behind him.
That's true. That's true.
And also still kicking.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
So there you have it. That's how I got my villain on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then I am Darren Noel, and my favorite villain this week, I'm going out of the house and going to the people next door. I'm going with Mysterio.
Ooh, Mysterio.
Because any guy who wears a fishbowl on his head with that fabulous green and purple cape, you know, that takes balls.
Hey, so, green and purple, that's classic supervillain costume.
Classic villain right there. I want him in a Spider-Man movie worse than bad. Kidding.
Yeah.
It's a movie special effects guy. Come on. Can't you write that?
Exactly.
What the hey?
Yeah. Yeah. It does beg
to be made.
How have they not? Yeah.
I know.
But at least we got the Sandman.
Yeah.
Ooh. At least that. That's painful when he gets into those private places. He chafes in there. So
Indeed.
It's a little gritty back there.
Unfortunately, our roving reporter, Matt Kramer, didn't make it back from the last mission. So we'll have to.
Yeah, he's in a prison.
This is Comics Podcast. He'll probably be back.
Exactly.
We didn't see a body, so.
Exactly. You know, there's no proof. There's no proof. He'll show up and it'll be a shocking cover with the rest of us standing there saying, no, it can't be.
Exactly.
And yet it is.
I am Scott Coles, and this week my favorite villain is the Ice King from Adventure Time.
Oh, nice.
Nice choice.
I don't know if it's a series. It's a the latest episode anyway dropped this weekend, so we watched that up, and oh, it was so good.
I love that show.
It's so good because it's got all that really, you know, the silly goofy stuff on the top, but then there's layers and layers underneath, like the alternate universe where they're all gender reversed,
gender switched. Yeah,
the history of what happened before the Great Mushroom War.
I love that.
And that's what this episode was all about. It was about Simon, the Ice King, and Marceline, the Vampire Queen, when she was a little girl before just after the Mushroom War.
Nice.
So it's sort of, it's about his descent into madness due to the influence of his magic crown.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's like that because of the crown. He was a cool dude before. But the crown's influence made them all cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So it really is cool. Tragic.
I know how he feels.
Yeah, it's so good.
Between
that episode and the I Remember You episode, you get a sort of a picture of the history that Marceline and the Ice King have. And it's really sort of bittersweet.
I haven't watched past season one, so I haven't.
You got to get in it, man.
Yeah, we just got it a couple of months back, and that's probably Ella's favorite show. Like, given morning, it's Daddy, I want to watch Batman, or Daddy, I want to watch Adventure Time. And yep. And we'll sit and we'll watch that. And you know, she liked the regular show for about 5 minutes, but it's but she's all about Adventure Time, you know. And Finn the Human
has all them princesses in it.
Well, and that's it, right? You got princesses, and you got a dog that if you've seen the one where he turns into like real world, he's a pug.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So you know, so she's like, he's just like Charlie, and. Yeah, so the kid's all over that, and yeah, she loves her some Adventure Time, and so we've watched a lot of the first season, but yeah, I haven't picked up anything beyond that, but I'm kind of getting that way.
That's a good segue to plug Mike Norton's Battle Pug right there.
Absolutely,
we haven't talked about Mike Norton in
getting enough pugs in your life,
yeah,
and seriously, who is?
Well, some days I am.
Well, that's
love that little guy, but there are days.
there are moments.
But yeah, it is battlepug.com, and it is also available in a spiffy hardcover from Dark House. If there was an imprint called Dark House, they would like have a street fight with the Dark Horse guys so that they could carry
Double
it.
A. Yeah,
it's totally. Probably true.
I feel certain some about kind of this.
Sharks action going on there.
Exactly.
Yeah, snapping fingers in the streets.
Yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful thing. So yeah, check out battlepug.com.
We're going to summon Peter Rios. Careful, don't do that.
That's all the last right. Thing. There is some supervillain news. DC supervillains to be featured in new documentary. This comes to us from sciencefiction.com. So the documentary is going to be called Necessary Evil, Villains of DC Comics. It's set to begin filming yesterday as we record this. They were filming it. They were starting at WonderCon in Anaheim. And the special will be released on home video later this year. But DC is encouraging WonderCon attendees to dress as their favorite DC supervillain for the chance to appear in the doc. Some earlier notice might have been nice, he says. I don't have a Black Manta costume just lying around. Jeff Johns says, DC Comics is known for many things, but chief among them is the compelling, diverse, and legendary society of supervillains who populate its universe. From the monstrous Solomon Grundy, to the brutal Black Adam, to the charismatic Sinestro. See, they mention Black Adam, and this reminds me that one of the bedtime comics has been, speaking of Mike Norton, The Power of Shazam, that he drew with Art and Franco.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's been all about, like, you know, is Black Adam in this, Daddy? Well, no, sweetie.
She's liking villains. She's liking them. Uh-oh. You got trouble. Chicks
are always the best.
Chicks always do, man.
Chicks always do. Loving the bad boys. Oy. Loving the bad boys.
Yes, to the charismatic Sinestro, he says, there is no single greater collection of villainy in all of fiction. These villains are hugely popular comic book characters in their own right, and quite honestly, many are oftentimes more popular than some of our iconic superheroes. So he says it's time that we deconstruct these complex and sinister antagonists and celebrate the role they play. The role they play is the engine and energy of some of the greatest storytelling in comics. 2013 is the year of the villain at DC Comics.
Woohoo! About damn time.
Let's remember, they
did this before.
Oh, or are they just talking about editorial?
They're talking about their editors. Okay, I get it.
but no, they, you know, every now and then you got to bring it back to the bad guys. It's what it's all about. This is how we have a show. The documentary will be narrated by famed movie villain Christopher Lee, who has portrayed some of the most iconic fiends to ever grace the silver screen, including Dracula, the Mummy, and Frankenstein in Hammer's horror series, Count Dooku in the Star Wars prequels, and Saruman in the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit trilogies.
That's some good cred.
Yeah, seriously.
He's got villain cred. So there
exactly.
You go.
DC's press release says, in this new documentary film, the malevolent, sometimes charismatic figures from DC Comics' hallowed rogues gallery will be explored in depth, featuring interviews with the famed creators, storytellers, and those who have crafted the personalities and profiles of many of the most notorious villains in comic book history. Anyway, so lots of supervillains. I don't know if anyone saw the... In a couple of years back, they did the Secret Origin, the story of DC Comics, which was really good.
It was,
yeah, and I think it, you know, and to be fair, when they do these specials on the DVD movies, they do a really good job of them. And so, if it's along those qualities, hey, this will be good stuff. And I'm sure we'll see many former and current squad members in amongst the crew. And in fact, in the image that they show with the article, you've got Harley, you've got Poison Ivy, you've got Sinestro, Luthor, Bizarro, Penguin, Catwoman, Professor Zoom, Ra's al Ghul, Mr. Freeze, Deadshot.
Oh yeah, Deadshot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Deadshot.
The aforementioned Black Manta, and many, many more. So can't go wrong there. So
there
that
can,
is just the villains. Now, on to our next thing. Boy, do we have egg on our face. can you guys believe?
No one noticed, though.
I know, right?
And no one wrote. No one said anything to us about this.
200
It took us being completely drunk and wasted to realize we have not done this yet.
234 episodes. It really is. And somehow we missed... the first issue of John Ostrander's Suicide Squad run. We did all the stuff that led up to it. We did the Secret Origin story. We did the stuff in Legends. And then we went on to issue 2.
Yeah. What's up with that?
We even did all those retro issues from the old Suicide Squad.
The Brave and the Bold days. Yeah. You know how long it took to track those down?
Oh my! Yeah. But somehow none of us had a copy of Suicide Squad number 1.
It's very hard to find.
It seems to be, yeah. Maybe it's just where we live.
Maybe.
We're out of the distribution zone.
Someone bought up all the copies. They were like, oh, I'll show those bastards.
Mosby!
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, speaking of Mosby, on a parallel universe, as this episode drops, I will also be on the Tales of the Long Box podcast.
Podcast whore.
Yes. taking a look at DC Comics Presents 59. Speaking of villains, in that book, the villain in that issue, the villain was Ambush Bug.
How dare you?
How dare I?
How dare they not invite me for that one?
Speaking of podcasts,
I mean, alternate universe, me, obviously.
yeah. Obviously, different universe, yeah. Dude. Anyway.
anyway.
All right. So let's take a look at this issue from way back in May
1987. Wow.
Way back. Take it away, Scott.
All right. So we have, of course, the awesome black, hot, slick black Howard Chaykin cover. These 8 people will put their lives on the line for our country. One of them won't be coming home. So we've got the Enchantress, of course, Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, Plastique, Bronze Tiger, Rick Flag, Nightshade, and Mind Boggler. There's a lot of gender equality in the Suicide Squad. As we've noticed, we've said many times.
Oh, as we're always saying, yes. Oh,
yeah.
We're always pointing that out. Yeah, women bite it just as much as men do in this series. So.
Hey, now.
That's what she said.
What I said. Oh.
Auga.
Watch the teeth.
yeah, but it's good. That's one of the things that makes, especially the Ostrander run, just sing. It's the fact that he's guys and girls, doesn't matter. He'll bring them all in. If they can do the job.
Yep.
So be it. Mm-hmm. They're definitely one of the most gender balanced teams in the DCU.
True.
Even the boss. The boss is a woman.
That's right. Sometimes he's even a fat woman.
Sometimes.
The way she was drawn back here, I mean,
oh,
wow.
I love it. Yeah.
I love it, but you can't help that it is definitely mammy characterization going on here. So
I hadn't thought of it that way. That's interesting.
Maybe, yeah, I mean, it's
I haven't thought of it that way, at least since episode 150 when we talked about that for the whole episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In our spotlight on Mammy Wall.
why exactly?
Send her complaints to Paul French
at alternate universe Paul French.
But all I want to know is why we had to wear blackface for that episode. I mean, we're not even a video podcast. I was cleaning shoe polish off my microphone for a week. Matt, that was a terrible idea. For the record, I just want to put down right now.
That's right. That's right. Blame the dead guy.
Who else can you blame? Okay, so we open. There's an airplane. It's Air Force One coming into Hub City Airport. Coming in for a landing, we got an interior shot of the airport, trial by blood, lots of people all over the place. There's a dude in a red shirt who's sort of standing motionless in the airport, and he seems to be observing.
That's never a good sign.
Yeah, really.
No.
Especially like that. Like the two dudes to the left there, they're leaning on shit. They're like, yeah, you know, we're hanging out waiting for something. This guy is standing in the middle of the aisle with his hands and fists, mind you, too. So he's clearly ready for something to happen, and it's probably not good.
Yeah, and he looks gray, too. I mean,
yeah, he's that was sort of their compromise Kuraki skin tone.
Okay.
Full black, he's just ouch. But yeah, I don't know. The coloring isn't the best, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He does look rather gray. Sort of zombie Kuraki.
Yeah, zombie guy standing there. It's like, really? Okay.
And no one noticed.
He looks taupe. He's taupe.
Well, you know, Kuraki sounds like khaki.
Jesus.
Yikes.
So, of course, we have John Ostrander writing, Luke McDonald, the awesome, awesome Luke McDonald penciling.
Seriously.
Carl Kiesel doing bang-up job inking. Multiple award-winning Todd Klein is letterer.
Yeah.
And Todd Klein is the man.
Oh, yeah. So, there's a dude there. He's talking about the governor is going to meet the president first, but the mayor says, I got the governor's job, so tough. I guess these two guys are fighting over who gets to meet the president first. And, of course, as the plane touches down, the dude in the red shirt tucks into his finger. He's got a little microchip there we can see, and he says, now.
Oh.
Suddenly we get the all-too-familiar zeet, 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 zeet.
Ooh.
And the hole opens up on the wall, and out comes this big orange dude. This dude rocked my world when I first saw this guy. He's all orange and spiky. Gotta like it. He just comes running out, and his buddy has a spear. And out comes a woman with one of those bandito masks like in the old West. Yeah. She's gonna rob a bank. And the guy with the red shirt jumps into the hole, and the hole disappears. Meanwhile, the javelineer and the big orange lion guy are just tearing up the place.
They're killing everybody.
The place is getting tore up from the floor up. There's explosions and people on the ground and screaming and yelling, and the police are there. And they go to take care of the situation. They got their shotties out, and suddenly this sort of weird electrical dude comes out of a box and starts killing people too. They're trying to shoot the big lion guy, and it's just bouncing off him, and he's blasting concussive blasts out his hands. Rubble, and I hope that's pouring a beer or not.
Yes.
Because otherwise you should see a doctor. That was... The two dudes, the governor and the mayor, are walking along, and we see a man with sort of white sideburns and a little goatee. Well,
that's the same guy from before. That's the red shirt with the ashy skin, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So he comes up and he garrots the mayor, and then he stabs the governor in the chest with his knife.
Schmuck.
Yeah.
Tell me that's not a political statement right there. reverse the U and the M there. That's lovely.
The Secret Service guy is trying to stop him. He throws a bomb, explodes him up, and he says 3,000 more years, Kelly. So clearly he's working for Kelly. Mm-hmm. So the airplane touches down, but they get the notice that there's bad stuff going down in the airport. Get back airborne, just keep the president safe. The airplane goes to go up, but unfortunately, there's another dude in a red shirt. Now, see, I think this is the dude in the red shirt that was in the first panel.
Yeah,
it is.
Same guy.
He got not the same down guy. At the bottom there. The C. Oh, sorry, he you're got, right.
This is Rustam.
The teleported other in.
It yeah, yeah. A bit of a uniform, doesn't it? Yeah, this guy's wearing black pants. The other guy was wearing green pants.
Oh, I got them confused.
This is the guy who jumped through the wall earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's
there's another guy who looks exactly the same, but he has black pants on.
He has a goatee. This guy doesn't have the goatee.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The guy with the goatee has the green pants. This guy has the black pants.
Well, isn't that racist?
No, they're green pants again.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, okay.
It's like they're wearing the same outfit, it's just they're slightly different.
Okay.
Anyway, so outfit, he produced flaming sword. And he shrang and he cuts the landing gear off the plane and the wing. So obviously it's not going anywhere. It crashes. Yeah. He jumps back into the teleport hole. The plane is going down, lost its landing gear. Badoom! Take a drink.
Ooh, take a drink.
Oh, yeah.
Doom.
It's a Badoom.
It's a Badoom. You got to take a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And the plane explodes. So much for the president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here's this is the guy with the white streak and his sideburns and the goatee. He picks up the box featuring the electronic man and puts him back in. And then him and the lion guy and the spear throwing guy all jump into the wall and disappear. Leaving behind carnage in massive proportions.
So 8 pages, and that's more action than happens in some complete story arcs these days.
Mm-hmm. And way less dialogue.
Oh, yeah. Unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, utilizing the fact that it is a visual medium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You'll notice though, there's not a lot of blood in any of the panels, though.
Yeah, just but at the bottom of this one.
Yeah.
Well, there's some green liquid, but that's certainly not blood. So
no, but at the very bottom, there's the guy, the black guy in the orange shirt.
Yeah, I see him. Yeah. That little itty bit of blood right there.
Yeah, but considering all the carnage, that's not bad.
Is this
these?
Well, you wondering if the colorist got the wrong memo that green stuff should have been blood.
Well, it was it was a code book.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah,
code book in the 80s. They had to. Tone her down a little bit.
Mm. Yep. Sure thing.
So, three men walk through the devastated airport. He says, time of attack from initiation to final withdrawal, 1:07. It took them 1:07 to demolish this entire airport.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Estimated casualties, 300 to 500, at least that many again wounded.
What a mess.
They need 6 hours for the initial body count, 24 to 36 for a detailed report. Mm. These figures will vary with the size of the airport and the density of the usage at time of attack. You will note that Jihad suffered no casualties. They are a fine tool for avenging yourself on America without putting people at risk of American reprisals. So clearly they're some sort of terrorist unit for hire.
Mm-hmm. And this was a demonstration, a simulation.
Oh, we're in Karak.
That's President Marlowe, the balding guy there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the other dude is very surprised he would sacrifice his own people for this demonstration. He says, Karak is a poor country with few natural resources. Some sacrifices are necessary for us to create a marketable export. These are from our prisons, criminals, dissidents, intellectuals, artists, you know the sort. Expendable. Mm-hmm. Actors hired abroad for a movie. Oh, man.
It's like Argo in reverse.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's the role of a lifetime.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
No one will remember any role you do after this one.
And he even quotes Hitchcock. As they say, actors are such cattle.
Oh, show. Roughly a week after the FIA has cleared the account, he says, the jihad can be ready to strike. Even if the target was within the United States, he says? I assumed it would be, General. Good deal, Marlo. And we fade back from the apparently constructed airport in the middle of the Karaki Desert.
Yeah.
And we cut to Bell Rev Federal Prison. Our beloved Bell Rev.
Indeed.
Looks kind of like a coffee table. One of
our favorite places.
Yeah. So we have a man showing a woman through the prison. Oh, it's Vicky Vale. Look at that.
Yeah.
Is it Kim Basinger?
in a couple of years, she would be.
That's true, she would be. Yeah. No wonder she's getting some press now in the comics here.
There you have it.
This is, of course, John Economos, the prison warden, taking her on a tour. So basically, they explain that Bell Rev is, of course, the prison for superpowered criminals, holding facility for those that most federal prisons can't deal with. It's an interesting little, and as you know, the Keene Act of 1961. Huh? Keene Act. Yes.
Who watches the Watchmen? Hello. Mm-hmm.
And the Ingersoll Amendment. Now, I wonder what that's about. If that's a nod to it as well. I don't remember that.
I don't remember that being in Watchmen, no. But
No, I don't remember that either.
But I almost think it has to point to something else that we're just unaware of. So, listeners, if you know anything about it, please.
Okay, let us. So registration acts. Okay, so sorry, I had it here for a second, and where did it go? Hang on. On this page, there we go. Okay, so there is also a piece of legislation called the Keene Act, an apparent reference to Watchmen in the DC Universe. First mentioned in Suicide Squad, issue number 1, in a story written by John Ostrander, the Act is referred to as a piece of legislation from 1961 which gives prisons greater leeway in imprisoning superhumans than ordinary prisoners. In other words, you know, we don't have to worry so much about their rights.
Basically keep them completely incapacitated all the time if you have to.
Exactly. Yeah. It says it was more fully explored in Secret Origins number 14, which of course we did way back when. Again, written by Ostrander, where it is revealed that the act was passed in 1961 and it reaffirmed the right that had been cast into doubt by HUAC in 1951. That was, of course, the when the JSA was asked to unmask. Of superheroes to operate with secret identities. And of course, if you remember, that was a big part of the Keene Act in Watchmen. The story also reveals that the later Ingersoll Amendment, which is a reference to lawyer and comics writer Bob Ingersoll, we'll get to him in a second. So this was an amendment to the Keene Act, which delineates governmental authority over superhuman activity in times of crisis, which was passed into law in 1972.
Ah.
So Bob Ingersoll had written he wrote some Donald Duck. He wrote The Green Hornet. He wrote House of Mystery, Justice Machine, Mickey Mouse, Moon Knight, and Star Trek. He was also
Good Lord, that's all over the place.
Oh yeah, he was also a frequent contributor for Innovation Comics, and I remember that one of these series. So he did the Lost in Space series, but he also did the Quantum Leap comic series.
Oh yeah,
and then he was a regular writer on Hero Alliance.
Oh, Hero Alliance. Oh, I haven't.
Now, if you have ever heard of this column, he wrote a column called The Law is a Ass.
I think I have read
it. It was that, a regular actually. Column in the Comic Buyer's Guide, which was also published online by worldfamouscomics.com from 1999 to 2003. The column examines the depiction of the law in comics and other fiction and compares it humorously to the reality of legal practice, hence the Ingersoll Amendment.
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a really neat touch. I love that.
That's very good.
So there we have it.
Yeah. So John Economos takes Vicky Vale to their newest prisoner. Came in last night from Pittsburgh. He's called the Parasite. And he looks fairly comatose. He's hooked up to a bunch of machines and wires and stuff. She's like, oh my God, is he alive? He says, yeah, but not awake. He steals energy from living beings, which is how he eats. He killed about 20 people that way. We, of course, see that we want to hear about that. We go read Firestorm 58 and 59.
Which, of course, was had it already moved over to Ostrander by that point? I think so.
Yeah.
He did the Pittsburgh move, if I remember correctly.
Right. I think he was solidly into his Firestorm run when this came around. Because I know a lot of the villains he used were Firestorm villains, because those are the ones he could get access to easily.
Right. How cool is that? Like, he could have his cake and eat it too. It's like he gets to have Firestorm fight them, and then once he's done with them, he has something else to do with them.
Yep.
Nice.
And a lot of them died, because I guess Firestorm had a lot of lame enemies.
It's so true.
That's true. That's true.
Slipknot.
Aw, poor Bug and Bite.
As we talked about in that the Suicide Squad Doom Patrol special, like, basically almost all of those dudes were fire villains, and they almost all died. So actually all of them died except for Rick Flag in that one.
Yeah, because exactly. I mean, that was
that's the one where he came back solo.
Yeah. Well, he brought the Doom Patrol back, so I guess it's good that they all died, because otherwise there wouldn't have been room in the plane.
That's true.
Very good point.
They serve their country well. Anyway, so yeah, no one knows what he is. Is he an alien or what? Is he a citizen? What jurisdiction gets him? What do you do with him while you try to figure it out? That's what we do here. So there's a little robot that brings in a mouse or a rat, like a lab rat, and a little crackle of energy comes out of the parasite's mind and zaps the poor rat. Just enough to keep him alive, but not enough for him to get active. And she's, of course, barbaric. She's like, oh, isn't the ACLU trying to do something? So is the ASPCA.
Yeah, and your point?
Yeah. She's like, doesn't it bother you? He's like, sure. But the thought of him on the loose in the street terrifies me. Yeah, I got a job to do.
Point.
Yeah.
It's not like you could put the parasite in the chair.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So really? What do you do with him?
He'd be like, it tickles.
So he sends Vicky Vale on her way, and John's talking to the doctor. What's her name? I can't remember. I don't think her name is Dr. Love.
Well, that wasn't Flo. Flo's the
Yeah, no, this is oh, it is Flo. Her name. No, it is Flo. Is that
Flo, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Crowley.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, John's got, as we know, has a bunch of ex-wives.
Apparently he loves the ladies, but can't keep them happy.
He mailed the wrong alimony check to one of his ex-wives, so he's got at least three, according to this exchange. Mary, Alice, and Jean. So Flo calls Amanda Waller, says that she's gone. Now she's in a meeting with Dr. LaGreve and Miss Marnie Hares, the Suicide Squad psychologists.
Yeah, they have a full-time job right there. Oh,
that was one of the great things about this series as well, as we keep saying.
Yes,
is that, you know, they have this sort of support team, and these are all broken people. And they have psychologists to figure out whether or not they can do the job that needs to be done.
And that's what made some of those, mm-hmm. Some of those sort of day in the life type issues so much more interesting, you know, where you got to find out a bit more about these guys, because they were every bit as interesting as the superpowered characters.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of
In fact, they made the flavor of the whole thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The private life.
I mean, without the background characters, you just have like a very, very weak Secret Society of Supervillains book. So,
yeah.
Right on. And the private lives issues were often just as engaging as the regular issues. They never felt like a film, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Same, I mean, there are people who can do it right. Like James Robinson with his Times Past issues.
Yes. Yes. You need, absolutely.
You give the artist a break. He'd do up a story, and it felt like it belonged there. And that's an important skill. I think that's a really important skill these days, when, you know, having a fill-in artist is often necessary.
Well, mm-hmm. and when you consider that you know, it, for the most part, like supporting casts in books, it's not something you see very often, at all, let alone one that's done well.
Yeah.
And so, this is, you know, this is a throwback that people would do well to throw back to.
Definitely. Indeed. Let's remember this when, you know, there are actually characters who didn't have capes.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Yeah.
Just to counterpoint the whole deal. So mm-hmm. we cut the squad room, the briefing room. Flag is there with his ditto sheets, his handouts.
There'll be a test on this later.
He's like, okay, you all know the drill. You understand the deal. And he's talking to Plastique. She's like, yeah, you take this mission and your sentence gets changed to time served, provided that you survive and you keep your trap shut. And of course, Boomerang's like, the gag is they don't expect you to survive, love. Want to watch your backside with this lot? I'll watch it with you, eh? What you say?
Oh, digger.
So from behind the glass, we get sort of the psychologist giving profiles on all the squatters.
Mm-hmm. Which is handy to know in the first issue. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. This kind of doesn't make any sense now that we've been talking with these guys for ages and ages, but just
for people's mollification.
Sure.
Exactly.
Well, briefly, I would imagine it would be like if you were doing a Legion of Superheroes podcast and you had to talk about the origin of Lightning Lad and Lightning Lass. I imagine it's very similar to that, where you hear about it all the damn time. But
you know, someone should do a Legion podcast.
Someone should.
Yeah,
true.
I'm not sure if there's enough. There's enough metal to mine there. Honestly, it's a very, very niche market.
So. It is a very niche market. It's true. But those Legion fans are rabid about Legion.
Perhaps in an alternate universe.
Maybe, maybe.
At any rate. So Flag, of course, took up the reins of the squad from his father. Well, not from his father, but in order to pay tribute to his father, who is the squad's first leader. He's very big into duty, very big into honor, and he's actually got a lot of psychological, not duty, duty.
You said duty. You said it, and you know you said it, and you can't unsay it. Duty.
You can't unring that bell, sir.
It's true. Yeah, he ran a small squad of non-supervillains earlier, but all of them died in a disastrous mission in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia.
Yeah,
since that's the rule.
A little bit tightly wound. So he's mm-hmm. going to counseling.
A little bit.
Next up, of course, we have Floyd Lawton, Deadshot.
Yay! I got shot by him at MegaCon.
I saw
a picture of me being shot by him. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Say.
Not in the face.
That's what she said.
Auga.
Barney's the one that's been working closely with him. Uh-huh.
Yes, I bet she has. Say no more.
He is strongly self-destructive. He's got a death wish. He wants to die, but he can't take a cheap way out. He has to go down gun blazing. So he figures a suicide squad is the best way for him to do that. Dr. LaGreve, of course, warns Marnie to stay objective. Don't get too involved. Ha ha. Which she
a little too late for that, Doc.
You know, that Deadshot mini, of course, one of the classics in the DC 4-issue minis of the 80s. We have the second in command, Bronze Tiger. He's, of course, amnesiac, and the squad has promised to help him regain his memory if he helps them out with sort of disciplining and keeping the rest of the scumbags in line.
Well, didn't he kill Batwoman way back when?
Well, he was a member of the Legion of Assassins, the League of Assassins.
Mm-hmm. He was being brainwashed into killing Ra's. So he killed Kathy Kane way back when.
It wasn't Ra's al Ghul back then. It was actually the O-Sensei.
Oh, was it the Sensei? Right, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
He still did kill Kathy Kane, so.
Well, I don't know if he did or not. I'm not aware of it. But anyway, he was an assassin. They're still not sure how far that conditioning goes. So they think, like, who he could snap at any time.
Ooh.
And then we have Little Miss June Moon, who sometimes is the Enchantress. Now, the Enchantress is interesting to me because she's not like your typical supervillain. She's one of those ones. It's more like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of deal.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to back up for a second.
Okay.
Bronze Tiger didn't kill Kathy Kane.
Oh, really?
He was sent to kill her.
There we go. Okay.
But Batman... basically, he fought Batman and actually defeated Batman, and another assassin killed her.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
It was something like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to find who it was.
Probably just some
was
guy.
Was it Merlin?
Hook.
Hook. I pan. Oh, now my. You'll tell me. Okay.
The guy that killed Dead Man, the guy that killed Boston Brand, was a guy with hooks for hands, or hook for a hand.
Ah, the one-armed man from The Fugitive did it.
Yeah. Same guy, yeah.
It doesn't say actually who killed her. It was just another member
Nameless
of the League
assassin
of Assassins.
Number five.
Yeah. Okay. Denny O'Neill basically said we already had Batgirl, so we don't need Batwoman. Boom.
Now, so Denny O'Neill killed her.
Exactly. Now everyone would flip out over that. All right, sorry.
Totally.
Back to you, Scott.
Anyway, so we have June Moon, who sometimes turns into the Enchantress, who's like got magical powers and a big witchy hat.
Mm-hmm. I love her costume. It's just too cool.
Stevie Nicks. But yeah, so every time she turns into the Enchantress, however, the Enchantress gains more and more influence on her. So it's hard for her to keep her in check.
Indeed.
LaGreve thinks she's a schizophrenic, but who knows? And then we have Captain Boomerang.
Digger.
Mm-hmm, boomer butt.
Boomer butt, yeah. I love that.
And they don't really say anything about him.
Well, he's the comedy relief in the whole series. Yeah. Come on.
He's just a bad guy, and he seems happy to do it, and he doesn't really care. He is the epitome of just a villain for villain's sake.
Yeah.
He just likes to do it. He just likes to do bad things. But he says, you know, they're all expendable. Here we go, blah, blah, blah. And this is where we get a little bit more of that Amanda Waller surrounding herself with people who will sort of keep her in check. She's like, I respect.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I mean, she's always going to be in charge.
But that's an interesting bit of self-awareness, though, because you're right. That's exactly why she's got these people there, is because they will. She knows that they will step in because she knows herself too well.
She knows that she's.
Well, and then she eventually, as these people kind of peel off and leave the series, she becomes less and less rational in a way.
Yeah.
And that's why
she has less keeping her, you know, in check. So,
and that's why she eventually loses the squad.
Yeah.
Before they come back as sort of a all in all mercenary team. Okay, so Waller comes into the briefing room, basically explains the gig. Any questions? She's like, "Why do I have this bracelet on? They said it'd blow my arm off if I wandered away from Flag." how come me and Mindboggle are the only ones wearing it? And of course, Boomer explains in his own charming fashion that that's just because they've all proven themselves. And, you know, we can be trusted. We just don't know you. And of course, that leads Waller to put a bracelet on him as well. So nearly compromised the entire squad last time. I trust you less than I do the newcomers because you're a jerk and a screw up.
Mm-hmm. There's no reason for them to have the bracelets on when they're in the prison, but when they're getting ready to go, yeah, bracelet him up.
So we get to the briefing. She basically goes through the whole deal. So we get the sort of unveiling of the jihad in film strip PowerPoint program form. So we have Rustam. He's the guy with the flaming sword. We have Dijin, the electronic man. Manticore, the big lion guy. Jakuli, the little spear guy. He has super speed, little short burst of super speed. He's no Flash. And the Jihad's only female member, the Chimera. She's the one with the bandito mask. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, there's Ravan, the last of the old thuggy sect, or the first of a new thuggy, as he sees it. He worships Kali. So every time he kills, it's just part of his worship. So he's using his religion as a means to get employment.
And doesn't that get tied in later to Cobra? And I mean Cobra with a K, not Cobra from G.I. Joe.
Yeah, he's not after any weather controlling device. He's definitely
okay, cool.
Cobra are... It's diametric opposites. It's sort of he feels like it's his destiny to kill Cobra.
Oh, okay. So he's Duke, in a way.
Well, yeah. Because Cobra, his whole thing is sort of ushering in the Kali Yuga as well, but Ravan sees him as sort of an imposter.
Mm-hmm.
There's President Marlowe, and then there's his sort of second-hand man, or right-hand man. Secondhand man, what the hell is that? he's the guy with the little mustache and sunglasses.
Yeah, Mushtaq looks an awful lot like Batman's Matches Malone character.
Yes. Okay.
I'm surprised we tied that in one time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, their headquarters is in the mountainous southern part of Korak. It's called Jotunheim. It's a giant base built into the side of a cliff. It is a supervillain base.
Yep.
Built by the Nazis during World War II. Get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Better than that. Ex-Nazi hideout. They considered a tactical nuclear strike to take it down, but it wasn't a sure enough bet to wipe them out.
Mm. Wow.
So there you go. So we need to be able to disavow if things go wrong. You go in, take out the jihad, and get out. So that's it. They get ready to go. And we get a little charming character moment there with LaGreve saying, "Did you tell Flag about the newest member to join the ground crew?" And she's, "Oh, it must have slipped my mind."
That's convenient.
Like, it's hardly a good time to spring this kind of surprise on him. All surprises from here are going to be nasty if he can't hack this one. He can't hack what's coming up, and I want to know. So they go down to the SS-1, the Suicide Squad plane, the big red delivery jet.
It's subtle, isn't it? The big red...
So they're getting into the plane. Flag goes into the plane to check things out. And in there is, dun, 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 Karen. Not Karen. Karen, of course, is a member of his previous squad who is long thought dead, at least by him, that Flag was in love with. He's like, "What are you doing here? Why wasn't I told? I'm so glad to see you." And she's like, "I would have been, Colonel, back in the hospital when I was trying to get over my nervous breakdown. I would love to see you." I'm sorry, doctors told me I shouldn't. At first, when I started my therapy, that may have been true. Not later. You didn't even know I was out of the hospital until just now. I'm in charge of emergency and combat medical operations for the squad. I said yes to pay what I owe to Jess and Hugh. I trust that what you and I once had will not interfere with our being able to work together professionally.
Ooh. Yeah.
Ooh. And Jess and Hugh were the other two original members of the Suicide Squad who are dead, correct? As far as we know.
One definitely is. One is not.
Well, as far as we know.
This time, for sure, we don't know that. But
yeah. Okay.
50, we find out for sure. You remember issue 50.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, totally. 50,
yeah.
Oh, that's a
I'm great just saying, if someone's listening to these in order, you know, you don't want to give anything away. So.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, they are, for all intents and purposes, dead. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And Digger, of course, is making fun of the ladies like he does. As soon as he hits on them and they reject him, he just starts making fun. He mentions that Plastique blew herself up and knocked herself unconscious. First time she fought Firestorm, he stripped her naked. So, she's not happy. Mindboggler sees him making fun, and she's like, well, you know what? How about some of this? And zaps him with her mind hoodoo, and all the superheroes are laughing at him. Loser, clown, ah, ha, 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 ha. And Captain Boomerang is not happy. He hucks a boomerang at her, and Bronze Tiger grabs it out of the air.
Ninja powers.
Power indeed. And he just says, cool it. Dude's like Shaft in this thing. And Digger's almost going to get into it with him, but then Flag says, shut up. I'll tell you when to throw those things. I will blow your arm off if you do it again. It's like, oh, we're off to a flying start.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Take off for Korak. So now you can go back and read the episode we did for issue 2 and find out how again.
Find out how all that worked out.
I'm sure nothing bad could have happened.
Yeah, it all could have only gone well.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's true.
All right.
I'm not huge on the digital coloring, but
yeah. So we're all reading this off one of the Comixology ones, and it seems so they
seems a little weird, doesn't it?
It's very vivid.
Yeah, it's very 80s colors for some reason. Which was an 80s book. But
the difference is it was an 80s book that was printed on newsprint.
Yeah,
and so newsprint tends to mute the colors quite a bit. So because it doesn't look like, because I can only imagine if they were going to have this recolored, they would have gone with sort of modern rendering.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if what would have been worse, right? So,
you know, indeed. I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, we have a Stump the Squad.
Ooh.
Yes,
we haven't had one of those in a while.
Exactly, this one's from the home office in Lebanon, Indiana.
Walla Walla, Washington.
Walla Walla, Washington. All right, this one comes first with a list.
Ooh, a list.
We like lists.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Who are the 5 most published supervillains in the DC universe?
Oh, well, Luthor.
Yep.
Joker.
Yep.
Catwoman.
Yep.
Are we counting her as a villain? Because
you're getting them in order so far. So.
Oh, sweet. points for me. But after that, it gets kind of muddled, I think. We're going to have to go old school and keep moving forward, I guess.
Is it okay? Are these DC? All DC?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I figured that. So, if not, it would be Dr. Doom and a couple others.
Luthor, Joker, Catwoman. Luthor,
Joker, Catwoman.
Probably
Nazis in general, but it's not specific.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one, isn't it? Once you get past those three, I'm trying to think of the old school villains who keep popping up and popping up and popping up. Vandal Savage, maybe?
No.
No, you don't think?
Give me a second. Surprisingly not.
Really? Okay. So
I would have thought, because there was a good few years where he was in everything.
Yeah, and he was Golden Age, so he's had a long history. That's what I was thinking. Longer history means more possibility of being published, right?
Yep.
So Brainiac?
He was the next on the list, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One more.
Those two bigs from both Superman and Batman.
So it's probably another Superman or Batman villain, honestly. Wonder Woman hasn't had that many consistent villains over the years. And Green Lantern.
I don't know that any of hers make the list.
Yeah, I don't think they will. Green Lantern and Flash, of course, changed from
Sinestro.
Golden Age to Silver Age. So
Sinestro is another one. But the next one, this is a big one. Think big.
Think big? Titano, the monkey. No.
big. Gigantic.
Great. Think
dark. Think great. Think Gorilla Grodd.
Side?
Dark side.
Dark indeed. Side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Lex Luthor.
That's surprising considering he's so newly published comparatively. So.
Well, yeah, but they used the hell out of him for a good stretch. True. So Lex Luthor with 2,402 issues. Joker with 1,414 issues. Catwoman with 1,143. Now, to be fair, she had her own series, right?
That's so that why helps. I went with her.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Brainiac with 822, so you'll see it drops off quickly. Mm-hmm. And then Darkseid with 723 appearances.
Wow.
Honorable mentions also go to the Penguin with 678, Two-Face with 667. Oh, there is a Wonder Woman villain, Ares, 584.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
That seems a lot, actually. That seems a lot.
Well, Ares, he appears a lot, but he's not necessarily the main focus of the story.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and
behind the guy kind of deal.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly. Here's something interesting. So Darkseid, 723 appearances. Desaad, only 298.
Oh, yeah. He's not always.
Yeah.
So, well, Darkseid does disintegrate Desaad every once in a while and then takes a while to reintegrate him. So, you know.
It's a good point. It's a good point. In the 1970s series, Secret Society of Supervillains, what was the secret identity of Star Sapphire?
She wasn't Carol at that time. Let me think. It was the one that was in the JLA story. And I forget her name. Pamela somebody, maybe? I'm totally guessing. So
Scott?
I have no idea.
It was Deborah Camille Darnell. She was a stewardess at Ferris Aircraft. And actually, she got close to Carol. Like, she joined up at Ferris to get close to Carol to take the Star Sapphire.
The Star Sapphire away, yeah.
And, because they were trying to make Carol a little bit of a softer character at the time. And so it was better to have just another villain.
Mm-hmm. And then they turned her into the Predator. Imagine that.
yeah, exactly. So then, last question. Who played the Mirror Master in the Flash TV series?
Oh, dang it. Had you said Trickster, I would have known that.
Yeah, well, that'd be a little easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, come on. Where's the low ball?
Hey, now.
Hey. Mirror Master.
Was he a British guy?
No, he was not.
What? That's ridiculous. How could he not be a British guy?
That's like
somebody, John Constantine, not a British guy.
And not be blonde.
How did you do that?
I don't know. Very honest with you.
Something in my mind wants to say the guy that played Max Headroom.
Matt Frewer?
No, Matt Frewer. He did.
He was in there somewhere, though, wasn't he?
He was. I can't. Oh, well, no. What's her face that was in Max Headroom? Amanda Pays. She was Tina McGee in that series. I don't know if Matt Frewer appeared in it. But no, in fact, it was Mr. Keith. Yeah, Andre Brower. That's right. Ah. No, it was Mr. Ah. No, I kid.
That would have been funny as heck.
It was not Glory's Andre Brower. It was, in fact, Keith Partridge himself. Mr. David Cassidy. Yes.
Wow. Oh,
So there we have it. Not stumped. You got the list.
Yay!
Yay!
And that is again means that you knew and knowing is half the something or other. So
half that's not green lasers and red lasers.
Exactly.
Half non-battle, you mean?
We'll all, of course, be at the Alternate Universe Super Show next week.
That's woo-hoo!
In Reading, Pennsylvania, and
we'll be broadcasting nearly live.
Nearly live, exactly.
Wish us luck.
So that is April 6th and 7th at the Greater Reading Expo Center. Show hours Saturday from 10 to 6 and Sunday from 10 to 5. But if you're going to make it all the way out to Reading, then
stay the whole day. Come on, people.
Exactly.
Ooh, it. There's always after school activities.
Exactly. And we will be
after school activities, don't there?
We will be part of them.
We mean drinking.
Cthoon. I mean,
Badoom.
Badoom. Badoom. Badoom.
I don't know what you're talking about. There must be something.
No, I've been waves.
Fugue state?
No, I've been having this weird headache today where, you know, I close my eyes and then I think I'm reappearing elsewhere. It's very bizarre.
It's those red skies, man. You gotta watch out
for those red skies. Red skies at night. It's very painful.
Yeah. So all right. So for some reason our web address is all messed up. comments, as always, can be sent to, you know, Substitute Squad is spelt all wrong. Legion of Substitute Podcasters at gmail.com. You can join in the conversation on our Facebook page. Just do a search for Legion of Substitute Podcasters. For some reason, that is happening. It's like an alternate universe Facebook or something. So you can just type in facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. And it
you, Zuckerberg.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All his fault.
Yeah. So, we are also on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. Again, the typing is challenging, apparently. So with that, we make our way back into the prison cell.
Yep.
And I'm sorry?
I thought it was the briefing room.
The briefing room, yes. How could I have forgotten this after 234 episodes?
I don't know. I
haven't got this down after this long, Paul. We may have to replace you.
That's true.
With the penguin or something.
And we will see you all with our bracelets on our next mission.
Badoom!